Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Working through series here on our target players, basically working backwards to forwards. And so we'll start here with the we did the tight end position yesterday. We're going through the quarterback position today. And I'm going to work on, and I've been sort of toying around with this, and it's quarterback just works a little bit differently. And I think it's taken me some time to think about how I want to sort of think about quarterback in terms of some of the density and the hit rate stuff, and the density arguments, because I think once you get to a couple of hits, like, you sort of put yourself in a whole different strata. So, you know, the difference between the guys that have two hits compared to one hit is a lot different than the guys that have 0 to 1, right? Like, it's much more they're just much more in a different strata. So I've been trying to think about how to sort of work that, if we should sort of reduce draft capital once we get there. You know, why is there a reason to treat Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott once they get to sort of that elite level? Why is there a reason to sort of treat them differently? So that's one of the things I think there with them that I just have some a little hang up about. I gotta sort of finish through, and I think I'm sort of on it. So I'll be working on that here in the next couple of weeks here to sort of get that wrapped up. So we'll do the quarterbacks backwards. So I think down at the bottom, 16-10 Jacob Eason as a backup to Wentz makes some sense. I wouldn't expect much. I don't think he's like a long term developmental answer, but if you're looking for a depth stash, that's not a bad one. Brissett. Again, we kind of know who he is and that he can play. So that's 2607. He's quarterback 50. Jamie Newman, Dwayne Haskins, 2607, 2402. Neither of them really interest me too terribly much, but I think Haskins is an interesting monitor, but it looks like he's kind of buried at this point, and that he's kind of played himself out of the NFL. So he's not really on the list. A couple guys on the list that I find pretty interesting: Minshew at 2204, Trubisky 2203. They're both quarterback 46 in terms of their median. I think both those are interesting, and you sort of package them together with Mariota, who's at 1912 and 43, quarterback 43 there. I think that three guys is pretty interesting for whether that's one injury away, whether that's potential, bridge guy going forward. Could Trubisky potentially, rework his career or something like that? I'm not sure that you're going to get a week one starter out of him outside of a scenario where it's like, hey, he's the backup to, outside of like a Tannehill situation where he's the backup to, Josh Allen's probably not the right guy, but maybe he's the backup to, Daniel Jones next year or something like that. Daniel Jones plays poorly, Trubisky comes in, and Trubisky plays well enough that they give him sort of a long-term Tannehill-like deal where they could get out of it in a year, something like that, where they could sort of, they could sort of cut bait if they wanted to, something like that. I think that's more the arc for him than it is, hey, here's the franchise keys. Right, so I think for Buffalo, his value is very much it's an injury away guy, and let's be honest, Allen has missed some time. Allen has been hurt at different times. He plays risky. Again, I don't believe in injury prone per se, but I do believe that I don't think people's bodies are necessarily, that we could say, oh, this person's had a high ankle sprain before, like, he's going to have another one. I don't think we can necessarily do that, and the sample's probably too small. But I do think if you sort of look at, Carson Wentz gets himself hurt because he does reckless things with his body. RG3 did reckless things with his body. And got himself hurt a lot. Where you see Lamar and Kyler, they don't necessarily do that. Newton would do some reckless things with his body. Allen will sort of do some of those things with his body. So you have that sort of feature to him that I do think presents maybe a little bit more of a risk factor than some of these other guys. So from that perspective, I think Trubisky's interesting because that offense is pretty good. Allen was good last year, no doubt. But I think if you take, you take backup quarterback, put backup quarterback in with Diggs and Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders and Gabriel Davis, and you've got Brian Daboll. I think all of a sudden you can say, hey, listen, that might be fringe quarterback one type production. So I think that one's interesting there. Minshew, I think potentially is a on the move type of guy. It would really surprise me if they held him. They're basically doing nothing to help Trevor Lawrence in the sense of like, hey, let's make him the face of the franchise. They've got, you know, the cult hero guy as this backup quarterback. And then they bring in, you know, Mr. Bestseller himself, Tim Tebow, to play, you know, the Taysom Hill role. And all of a sudden you're like, what the, I don't understand what they're doing. So yeah, Minshew seems like he's, should be someplace else, and that's not even a Minshew thing. It's just a help your starting quarterback type deal, but I'm not sure what we're going to see there. A couple of guys here, you know, Dalton's a more expensive version of that at a, you know, he's 18-12, you know, and that's basically four, you know, three and a half, maybe four rounds better than like Trubisky, for example. I'm not sure necessarily why you would do that at this point. So I think that's an interesting arbitrage opportunity if you're sort of looking for backup guys. You know, is Dalton going to be a difference maker when he's starting? You know, that's kind of the question you have to ask there. If you're going to sort of both pigeonhole them into being backup quarterbacks, I think just in a pure backup quarterback role, give me the variance that Trubisky has. Now, is there a chance that Dalton is a 6-8-12 heck, 17 game starter in 2021. I think those things are all possible. We'll see with Fields. I think if you sort of were to take the optimistic view on Dalton, it would be, hey, listen, everyone else is sort of fading Justin Fields, and the team that drafted Trubisky is in the same front office and coaching staff that drafted, or the same front office that drafted Trubisky is now taking Fields, the guy that everyone else was sort of fading. What does everyone else know that Chicago doesn't? And if you sort of take that view of it, you could say, hey, listen, Dalton's got a little bit of insulation there. You know, is Fields going to beat him out and all those things? I think that that's probably not the view that I would take. So I think Dalton's closer to Trubisky, but I think that would be the positive case there for Dalton. And I would understand that argument. Davis Mills is one of the more aggressively priced guys. You know, he's actually third behind Trask and Mond, which is interesting. Or Mond and Trask, I should say. I don't think any of those guys are particularly target worthy. You know, I think Mills, you know, if Mills started, you know, six games in his career, that would probably be a mild upset. So I'm not really going to do that there. I think there's other ways to go about the position. You know, give me one of the guys kind of behind him, or sort of go up the board a little bit. That would sort of be the thought. Cam, 35.5. He's 15.04. This is kind of like the Dalton situation all over again. And you're basically paying almost four rounds better, three and a half rounds better than three and a half rounds more than Dalton for Cam. And I just wonder at this point, you know, why you're going to make that. So Cam in that sort of sphere is interesting. But as I sort of look through it and talk through it, I think that there's a gap there that, you know, what are you paying for? And so that would sort of be the thought there. I'd almost rather have, you know, as an upside guy, I'd almost rather have Trubisky over Cam, because you're paying seven rounds less. And, you know, I just don't know if Cam's got that. He's got Mac Jones looking over his shoulder and all that stuff. Whereas I think from now on, basically Trubisky's going to kind of try and play that Tannehill type role where Cam feels like the lame duck. And that Tannehill type role just seems to have a little bit more juice to it in terms of, hey, upside flip potential. It's tough to flip Cam just because it looks like the horizon's really close, where with Trubisky, there's more variance there. That's sort of the argument. And it's seven rounds. That's not an insignificant gap. Taysom Hill is at 34. It's 13-11. He's going basically almost two rounds later than Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is interesting on the Fitzpatrick front particularly. What's really interesting is Fitzpatrick and Ben are basically a round apart. So Ben is 10-12. Fitzpatrick's 12-03. I think when you look at those, if you gave me even money about who starts more games in the rest of their career, man, it'd be tough not to take Fitzpatrick. I really struggle to see if he wants to play in 2022. I really struggle to see how Washington's going to have a better option. Again, he could go there and totally fall on his face. I don't think he's going to. Like, I think he's going to play them well enough to, they could be a playoff team. They could be a deep run playoff team. Right? If you take the, I was listening to Wharton Moneyball this week, and they were talking about, you know, how do you basically bet on someone like Phil Mickelson? And it's like, hey, you look at the guy who's a little bit lower down in his career, but you know what he's sort of done at his ceiling, and you take him because he's high variance. Right? That's how you sort of capture what happened at the PGA Championship from a, you know, plus, I think he was 250 to 1 or something like that to win. And Fitzpatrick almost seems like that same type of thing, where maybe the ceiling for him wasn't quite as high, but it was certainly fantasy usable, fantasy startable. And he's high variance, and you sort of take that and you sort of hope you can capture something with it. You know, I think with Washington, I think it's a really interesting bet. You're taking him basically a round later than Ben. As we sort of go through this, you're going to see that Ben is in that range with guys like with some of the backup running backs or some of the you know, Mike Davis types. And you're saying, you know, would I rather have, as you sort of put this together, would I rather have, you know, Fitz and Mike Davis, or would I rather have, you know, Ben and Daryl Henderson, right? I think that those are the types of things that you might find yourself debating. I think it's interesting as we sort of look through this, the trade-offs that you'll have to make, but that's definitely one that you're going to probably see. Jordan Love, 1109. You know, a lot of this is the types of bets you want to make. I think it's really interesting about, you know, why would you take Ben over Love, or why would you take, you know, Fitz over Love? Well, it's you're trying to bet sort of on the known or the near term, where Love's more the unknown and sort of the variance play, right? I could see both of those. Pull those arguments. I think they're interesting that they're in there together. I don't necessarily have a problem with the fact that Love's going there. I will say with Love, one thing that I think we should bear in mind is we're getting to the spot where it's a lot of narrative about him, and those situations always give me pause. They always give me concern, because when people just keep saying stuff, you know, and I've seen enough of this in sort of the research, that when people just say things over and over and over and over and over again, it just becomes the gospel. And a lot of times there's not truth to it. And so those things just give me concern with Love. You know, I don't know. And I think some of it's probably the Rodgers angle to it. But I would just say with Love, you know, if the fantasy community just keeps mocking him as being, you know, not that good, maybe he's not. But I would sort of have a little pause to the fact of just accepting that as a fait accompli. All right, so Jameis Winston, 909. He's quarterback 29. Again, I'd much rather have him than Ben. You know, this is he's basically the richer version of Fitzpatrick. We've seen him be really good at times. He's very high variance. He's got a ton of variance in his game, and he's going at a spot, though, that can absolutely outperform expectations, right? You look at a guy that in this range who can post a top six, top eight finish, and just, you know, stop me when you hear someone that can. Fitzpatrick, Love, Ben, Jameis, Jared Goff, Carr. It's probably Brady's the next one above that. But then you've got Daniel Jones. You've got Mac Jones. You've got Kirk Cousins, then you got Matt Ryan, right? Almost up into that Cousins, that Brady, Cousins, Ryan, which is going three rounds ahead of him. That's almost the point where you get to, like, all right, there's the same level of upside. So that's the thing with him. And I would just say, like, man, that's pretty, you know, that's quite a bit of difference there. As a proxy here in some of the work that I'm working on, quarterback 29, which is where Jameis is at, sort of by my numbers, that's about a 20% hit rate going forward. Again, I don't know how you don't kick, how you don't say that, yeah, I'll take that bet. Just with Taysom Hill, He's at 34. That's an 11% hit rate. So there's a pretty big gap there in terms of basically, you know, the market implied numbers almost 2-1 in favor of Winston. But again, pretty low. But hey, if you were to say, you know, give me over the next, you know, whatever, 2-3 years, give me, you know, the Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill, and you give me a half of like a top 15 or a top 12 season, I'm probably taking the over on it, just because I think both of them can offer that. And I think it's pretty, interesting there in terms of both of them as a stack, right? So if you wanted to go quarterback 3, and I think a good variance play in all of this would be if you go quarterback early, and you sort of wait and you say, all right, well, I don't, you know, I got to spend mid round resources on wide receiver or whatnot, right? We're talking about putting a board together. That's what the series is about. Thinking about it, the Jameis Taysom Hill stack, I think, is something that you can absolutely do as a quarterback 3, quarterback 4. You're going to probably lock down that situation in some way, shape, or form, whatever it turns out to be. You're going to lock it down, and you're probably going to lock down top 12, top 15 production out of your starter. And again, if there's injuries, if there's one of them replaces the other, something like that, like you've got options at that point. I think that's a really interesting one. I'm not a huge fan of necessarily drafting, you know, handcuffs. I don't think you need to like go out and handcuff all your quarterbacks or anything, but this isn't a pure handcuff situation. It's more of a stack, right? It's more of a, I'll just take them both and figure it out later. And I think at that cost, right, both of them can massively outpay. And I looked at Taysom Hill. You know, people, a lot of the narrative stuff, you know, we talk about narratives being bad. The narratives on Taysom Hill are pretty bad too, because he was actually over expectation, actually performed decently in some of the advanced metrics that I looked at earlier on in the offseason. So that would sort of be my thought there on him as well. All right, and then you sort of go up from there. I mean, Goff's kind of locked in, 2805. He's in the 9th round. Carr, you know, how much does Gruden ever really trust a quarterback? That's an interesting one. He's at 810. I think he's a long-term starter someplace. I think he's proven to be good enough. I just wish he could learn how to throw a play-action pass with average efficiency, and we would probably be looking at like a top 10 quarterback. Tom Brady, 709, that's 24.5. Again, some of these things with the quarterback stuff, it's tough because his odds of, the reason why his cost is what his cost is, his odds of producing a top 24 seasonal finish basically from that ADP would imply basically about 30%. We're going to take the over on that, but when you sort of look at, all right, two top 6 seasonal finishes over the next 5 years, the odds of that are like 3% sort of at that ADP. So super, super low. You'd probably even take that closer to zero. But it's interesting that's how low his cost is. When you sort of consider that the thing that you're sacrificing, which is the long-term high-end upside with Brady, it's like it's a 2-4% outcome sort of in the range that he's going anyways. So you're sort of looking at that, and you're taking guys like, you know, Daniel Jones and Mac Jones ahead of him. It's really, those are interesting things. You know, definitely I could see the argument for Mac Jones. I can't see the argument for Daniel Jones, honestly, above Brady at that point. But it's an interesting thing when you sort of look at some of these numbers. Again, they're skewy because of age at quarterback. And we sort of kind of know where these guys sort of where the horizon is on a guy like Brady. It's probably not 5 years from now. Cousins is going to be one of my favorites, of course. 708, that's quarterback 23. You know, that's fine. And you sort of look at some of the guys above him. You know, I'm not even listing some of the guys in here. You got Darnold and all those other guys. Like, they're not even, I'm taking those guys right off the board just because I don't like the bets. In terms of guys that I'm talking about in these tiers and stuff. Matt Ryan, 611. He's quarterback 21. Again, that's a really prime cost. Then you get Mayfield. And I need to do a bigger deep dive on Mayfield because I have sort of a variety of thoughts. But you're sort of looking at a guy, he's kind of in that 11-12% range, and sort of, hey, you missed to start your career 3 straight seasons. You're looking at you've fallen off the cliff. And his implied odds are 50-50. And you sort of look at the base rate on that, and it's like 11%. So you have to sort of make an adjustment there. To me, that's an avoid cost. You know, I understand there's other things to his profile that maybe we need to look at and sort of understand a little bit. If he gets basically long-term extended, is he sort of Derek Carr 2.0? Sure. How much does that move the needle? Does this become a situation where he's like Andy Dalton, where every year it's like, oh, he's got top 10 finish in him. He's got these good weapons and he's just not that dude. I think that's a very real possibility. So that's kind of the one with him that I think I'd rather in that range, like I'd rather wait or I'd rather go a little bit earlier, right? I'd rather take Stafford, you know, at the beginning of that round at 502, or wait around or wait two rounds and take Ryan or Cousins personally, just because I think that they have more upside. And again, if Mayfield does this again, like doesn't he fall another couple rounds? That's just kind of my take on him. That's just my concern spot. So, all right. And I haven't included rookies in this either, just because in terms of some of the startup stuff, I'm probably not going to make where their costs are. Probably not going to make a ton of targets on them just because I think they're overpriced. Tannehill, I did include Mac Jones, but either the more expensively priced ones, I'm probably just not going to be super on. All right, Tannehill, 506. He's at quarterback 17, so I like that price. Again, the question that I have with him is it might be a loss of an offensive coordinator. It is a loss of an offensive coordinator. What does that do to him? You know, we think highly of Arthur Smith. Does that have a trail impact on Tannehill? That would sort of be my cause for concern there with him. One person I don't have a cause for concern about his offensive coordinator is Matthew Stafford. I think he takes a big jump up. So 16.5, he's top six in some MVP odds. And you sort of just look at his price, like that seems like something that should be higher. So 502, again, that's a full tier after, you know, Watson, Rodgers type range. Watson himself, 3.12, so right at the end of the 312, right at the end of the third round, 12.5 in terms of his RDP. Rodgers in there as well. He's at just about the same. He's at 3.08. He's actually at 13 of a median, so he got some wonky numbers there going on with Watson, which shouldn't surprise. And, you know, the thing with Watson, you know, it's all risk. And I think this is a good part of this exercise, sort of as we go through all this. You understand the cost of the Watson risk. You understand what the cost is. You understand sort of how to play that, right? Is it, you know, if you go quarterback Watson, you know, is that you take Cousins as your third? You know, is it, do you want to take, can you run back Jameis and Taysom Hill? You know, if it's kind of a 1-year deal that you think you're risking with Watson, like that's a way to fix it. Or is it a punt this year? Do you incorporate Watson with your team build of like, all right, we're going to build for 2022. And my key to that is going to be Watson. That's an interesting turnabout as well. You know, so that would sort of be one of those things that I would, there's a lot of different ways to sort of incorporate Watson into a startup draft strategy, whether that's trying to embrace upside this year, whether it's trying to embrace long-term upside, whether it's to punt year one, right? I think he plays into a lot of different potential strategies there. So he's a really interesting one. And what I'm going to do is after this, we'll talk about some different types of strategies that you could sort of employ and sort of where on the board that those would fall. So I'm running through each of the positions here. And then over the next few episodes, we'll talk about the rest of the positions. And then we'll also talk about sort of, and I'll probably have some content, you know, on the site so you can see it and go along with it. But just like, hey, here are sort of the bets that you could make in certain ranges on certain philosophies. I think that's a really interesting sort of, you know, way to mesh these all these things together. He's one that's a big time pivot. Rodgers at 308, quarterback 13. You know, someone asked me recently, it's a third round reversal. Would you take, you know, I'm at 102. Would you take quarterback there? Would you take a top 10 quarterback, you know, on the way back? And I was like, you're not going to get a top 10 quarterback on the way back. You know, Rodgers is probably your best bet. You know, Watson's probably your best bet to sort of get one of those guys. I'm not sure I would risk that. You know, I do think that the strategy probably this year is if you're way up on the top of the board, you know, I could make the argument at like 110 to not go quarterback, something like that. But if you're way, way up on top of the board, it's just going to be really tough to not take a quarterback or not trade down, right? To take somebody other than you're getting a crack at a supermax quarterback, and you kind of, when you get that opportunity, you kind of need to do it. And if you're not going to, I mean, that's, you're leaving yourself in a potential big hole about how your roster is going to be put together. You're going to find yourself a little bit reaching. And if you're not doing it at the cost of trading down, you know, you're basically going to take a running back. Essentially, you're going to take a running back over a supermax quarterback. I think you have to, you either have to take the quarterback or you got to trade down. I mean, that's not typically something that I was super advising on. In prior years, I thought there were other ways to do it. But this year, just the way the board's falling, I probably, if I'm up in the top few picks and I get a crack at Mahomes, Allen, Dak, and then after that, it's a Murray, Lamar Jackson type conversation. You know, Russell Wilson's up there as well. I think if you sort of get a crack at one of those guys, it's going to be tough to pass up on it. So Wilson 202 is at quarterback 9. I think he's probably the best value in terms of maybe the quarterback position. I'd have him over any rookie. I'd have him over anyone. Joe Burrow, for example, as well. I'd have him over Herbert. So I think I'd probably have him like top 6, top 7 ultimately. It's a really good profile, and the age does not concern me in the least after the more research I've sort of done on that. Lamar Jackson, Dak, Murray, Allen, and Mahomes up there at the top of the board. I'm fading the rookies. I'm fading Herbert at that cost. To me, those risks aren't necessarily worth it. If it's a risk and you're sort of going down the board and you want to take a risk on someone that costs a lot less, you know, if you want to take a Trey Lance risk, a Justin Fields risk, I sort of understand that. And the cost in which they're going, I think to take, like, if you're going to take Trey Lance or Justin Fields over Watson, like, I think you deserve everything you get, personally. And honestly, like, I'd rather have Stafford than those guys too. And at that point, it just makes it, I'm not going to get them. And I sort of understand that. But I'm sort of going with the historical argument, and I'm going with the profiles, and I'm going with the risk. And I don't think any of them have higher upside than Stafford. So at that point, why am I sacrificing floor for roster sexiness? I just don't think there's a good reason to do that. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. The quarterback rundown. We'll do running backs, wide receivers here. I have some additional content here that I'm going to do comparing some of the rankings to some projections, see sort of where the inefficiencies lies, buy-sell candidates, all that stuff. And then we'll do a series on, you know, on different types of team builds, whether you want to go sort of win now, win later, you know, early core, young, you know, older core, and sort of all that. I do think, the big plays that I would sort of recommend here, you know, I do think that tier, if you're sort of going to look for backup quarterbacks, I think that tier, Mariota, Trubisky, Minshew, is pretty interesting. I think the Jameis, Taysom Hill stack is interesting. Fitz is interesting, quarterback 3, quarterback 4 type costs. And I think that can fit a lot of different things, right? If you sort of wanted to go, if your premise was Watson, win now, Fitz is a great insurance policy, right? If that's sort of what your angle is on at the beginning of the draft, I think Fitz is very conducive to that type of strategy. So that's one thing I would think and say, hey, listen, you could potentially use him and put him in that range and sort of backfill some of the Watson stuff. Again, it's not the same upside, but if you're sort of going contending team, Watson quarterback 2, backfill him with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, take him 10th, 11th round, something like that. That's really compelling stuff there. So, and then ultimately, I think, you know, could you fade the top 4 rounds quarterbacks? I think you could. I think that the strategy would require, and honestly, the question would become, would I rather, if I didn't go in the first round, or if I went basically didn't take Wilson, right? Basically, if someone Wilson or above wasn't my quarterback 1, would I rather go Rodgers or Watson quarterback 1, or would I rather go wait a couple of rounds and go Stafford quarterback 1? I think that's really the key debate point. to me as I sort of look at this. Again, you could potentially go young in that range. Instead, that wouldn't be something that I would necessarily advise. But let's just take it here for a second. Again, this would probably work even better if it was a trade down. But you could take, you know, if you took Stafford sort of in that range, you got Stafford, Tannehill in the fifth, Ryan late sixth, Cousins mid seventh, Brady late seventh, you know, Carr late eighth, Goff mid ninth, Jameis mid ninth, Fitz in the 12th, right? That would sort of be, and Taysom Hill in the 13th. I think that would sort of be the population of which I would sort of attack the position. Ultimately, that would sort of be how I would look at it if I was going to try and go the hey, let's fade the quarterback. I think it's doable. I wasn't on it earlier on in the offseason for the simple reason of I thought there was a lot of risk with guys like, you know, you could possibly include Ben in there as well. I would rather take a shot on Ryan Fitzpatrick personally. But, you know, with him and Fitzpatrick and Goff and Derek Carr and Cousins and Ryan, we didn't necessarily know per se what their security was. Now we know. And I think that population, again, you got to be very selective and you might need to go above ADP on some of these guys, above RDP on some of these guys, right? You might need to wait. You know, if you've got 410, you might need to take Stafford at 410 instead of waiting until, 503 or whatever. Yeah, whatever pick you would have there, right? You're gonna probably have to go up and do that, be a little bit more aggressive to get to that end of it. So that would be sort of the angle that I would look for there. Key guys that I think are avoids at their cost. Jalen Hurts at 14. I mean, you're taking him above Stafford. You're taking him at Watson. Give me both guys over him. And at that point, it probably doesn't matter much. Tua and Wilson, they're going ahead of Ryan Tannehill. They're going after Stafford, which is appropriate. Then they're sort of going in the Baker, Wentz, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins angle. Again, I'd probably rather reset the clock with Tua than Baker, personally. I could sort of debate the other guys in that range. I think that they're more appropriately priced than guys like Lance and Fields are. So that would sort of be if you sort of wanted to go young, I think you're taking a couple round discount on those guys over Lance and Fields. I know Lance and Fields do have probably higher upside in terms of their rushing ability. I understand that with them. I tend to like to get the cheapest of a group of guys. So the Wilson, it's not terribly cheap, right? The gap between Herbert and Tua last year was like four rounds in spots. That was much cheaper, and it was later too. So it was going, it was round five to round nine, right? That was be like, yes, I'm in. Now it's a little too early for me to sort of think that that's a great strategy in terms of shutting and trying to shut down, make Wilson a target player by taking him basically at or above Stafford. I just can't at present. I just don't think that's a great plan. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this quarterback. A little bit more of an extended one. Quarterback warrants talking about, so I can always go on about that. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.